Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back-to-school shopping done now at Amazon.com/back-to-school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 99, presented by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck Kirk Bowles. Oh, man, about to hit the links with a great guest. Let me tell you, Tiger Woods is one of the most intriguing athletes.
Compelling athletes since Muhammad Ali.
Since Muhammad Ali. Michael Jordan was talented, but not nearly as complicated as Tiger Woods.
No.
Tiger Woods is a soap opera unto himself. There's a book out called Tiger Woods by one Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan. And guess who we have calling into the dungeon? Mr. Katayan, a journalistic legend, one of the best in the business. Spend some time with us. Let's get right to it, Doug. Let's not dilly-dally around.
Why not? Let's go to the source.
Let's go to the source. Here's Armin Katayan on Tiger Woods. Joining us via phone in the dungeon. Wow. This is big, Kirk.
Big fish.
Another big fish, acclaimed journalist, Arthur, television reporter, one of my favorites from HBO's Real Sports, 60 Minutes. What else does he do?
He does it all. Author, multiple books. I mean, he's a man of many talents and a good friend. Armin, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Man, we're great. And it's Armin Katayan, Kirk.
He's Armin to us.
I mean, I know if it was Prince, we could probably get away with it. But of course, that'd be a seance.
Yeah. There's not the good thing, there's not too many Armins floating around in major mainstream media these days. So not quite like Tiger, but it's, you know, I can't claim an unusual first name, that's for sure.
Well, Armin, we have an Armin on to share with our listeners of On Second Thought. He just wrote this epic tome about Eldrick Tiger Woods. 3 years in the undertaking for you and co-author Jeff Benedict. What the hell were you thinking getting into a project like this?
Well, trust me, Kirk, those words were uttered several times during the course of the reporting of the book. You know, when Jeff and I, we had done, as you well know, a book called The System on college football.
Great book.
You know, that was centered in some respects in Texas, certainly with the DFO and Director of Football Operations. And we were looking for another big project, and our agent had brought up Tiger, and we're like, God, hasn't there been a lot of Tiger books written? And then we started to look at them and read them, and as it turned out, there were a lot, no question. But
right.
Most of them centered on certain particular segments of his life, mm-hmm. whether, you know, just after he had turned pro or after the accident in 2009 and when a spate of books came out in 2010. So we decided to jump in and there were several moments. It was far and away for both Jeff and I. And between the two of us, we had done 25 nonfiction books.
Wow.
This was the hardest one we'd ever done by a large measure.
Well, Armin, I know that in the history of sports, there's been a lot of stories written about the parent athlete relationship. You know, Customato was Mike Tyson's surrogate father, basically. Richard Williams raising two tennis legends, Mike Agassi. But in this case, I think this is maybe the most intriguing one ever. You start out in the prologue, Earl Woods buried in an unmarked grave in the other Manhattan, the one in Kansas. And he is credited with being a champion maker. How shocked were you to find when you found out that he was not in some grandiose, huge graveside with all the accolades and honors, just in a regular grave? How shocking was that for you?
It was probably the biggest surprise of the entire book, and the book's got a lot of them in it. But for me, when I was doing the reporting, we had hired someone in Manhattan, Kansas, happened to be the editor-in-chief of the Kansas State Collegian. He was John Parton, who was at the time, still in college. And I said, John, would you just go out to the cemetery? I know that Earl is buried out there, and would you talk to the sexton and get his name and see what kind of information that you can just, general information you can come up with? And when John called me back, he goes, you're not going to believe this. And he goes, I'm going to send you the pictures. And, you know, sure as heck, you know, there was a couple of stones, but they were just stones inside the cemetery. And you're right. You know, I thought there'd be a band playing 24/7 and spotlights and, you know, because that was Earl. And yeah. If Earl was anything, he was going to take credit for creating the chosen one. And, and that just, you know, we're all journalists here. The next question to come to my mind immediately was why?
Exactly.
Why is Earl buried in an unmarked grave? And that's just, that was Jeff and my decision to sort of set the hook in a holistic fashion to open the book before we really kind of dropped in the full story itself. And, you know, trust me, we answered the question, I believe, in the proper way, but it's a mystery. And especially as you mentioned, is because Earl was so loud and so proud of what he had accomplished with Tiger.
Yeah, Tiger's such a complicated person. I mean, of all your reporting over your years as a journalist, Armin, is he one of the most complicated superstars you've ever come across?
It's a funny word, Kirk, that you mentioned it. That's the word that everybody came back to time and time again. Mark O'Meara, you know, I said to him, I said, if you could, you know, if there was one word to describe Tiger, he took a long pause and he just said, complicated. And without question, he is, you know, Lance Armstrong, speaking of Austin,
and complicated.
Is among the most complicated athletes I've ever met. And you,
right.
I imagine he's on your list as
in terms of,
you know, just, you're just not sure what you're getting in terms of his mind is working so much faster at times than yours is. And I think Tiger's in that category for sure. And because he is so complicated, but the fact of the matter is that for the better part of 42 years, we all saw what Tiger and Tiger's people wanted us to see, which was a transcendent athlete, you know, probably the greatest individual athlete of the, you know, the modern era in sport.
Mm-hmm, right.
But we didn't really know him. We were awed by him, and we time and time again turned to the television to watch him do almost otherworldly kind of things with a club in his hand. But, you know, that was the really driving question for Jeff and I. It was really two questions, was who is Tiger Woods? And that's really a question that Mark Steinberg, his agent, and Glenn Greenspan, his chief spokesperson, have worked so long and so hard to keep out of the public eye, because frankly, there's, as you'll see and you know as you're reading the book, there's some pretty disturbing things about Tiger's personality. And then the second part of it was, you know, what's the price of genius? You know, without question, he is a genius,
mm-hmm.
But at what cost? You know, at what cost to him? At what cost to his relationships with other people? And that's where I think the book gets very Shakespearean and very almost, you know, Greek, and we could go in that direction as well in terms of tragedies is, you know, Tiger has thrilled millions and millions of people, but, you know, he's paid a pretty steep personal price because of the way he was raised.
Well, Armin, what's been the reaction, if any, from his camp? Have they reached out to you, because everybody read that book, number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list, and even if they didn't read it, I'm sure they were getting snippets in the media. Did anyone reach out to you, and what was their reaction?
Well,
let me
go back just a little bit. We reached out to them, Jeff and I, in January of 2016, the first time, and the book was still 2 years away from going to the printer. We were just in the early stages of our reporting, but we wanted to get on the record with Tiger's people, so we sent an email and said, look, we would just like to have a pre-interview, a sort of an introductory conversation with Glenn Greenspan to just see if there would be any interest on Tiger's part to talk to us, or to at least you know, go over some sections of the book to fact check and things like that. And what we got in return was this response that basically said, before they would consider, quote unquote, consider any kind of interview, we had to tell them everybody that we had talked to, everything that those people had said to us.
Of course.
And
yeah, sure.
We had to provide them. Yeah, I know. And we had to provide them with a list of questions before we would either sit down. And I mean, you guys know, come on. But in Tiger's world, and in that mega celebrity, hyper celebrity world, those conditions are placed on interviews time and time again, and people, they agree to them because they want access to the to get Tiger.
Absolutely.
And we were like, yeah, not in this, you know, millennium. Mm-hmm. So that started it. And then when the book came out, as we expected, and I think I could have, it was almost comical, I think I could have written the press release that they sent out myself, that they said that the book was a rehash, quote unquote, of all the other previous books. There was nothing new in it, and it was, quote unquote, littered with egregious errors. Well, if the reviews in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and Golf Digest and any number of Times of London and any other number of Washington Post, other reviews mean anything, the book's not a rehash of anything. It's a groundbreaking book. And as I've said publicly, and when this sort of first came out, you know, the book itself is 404 pages long, plus 60 pages of source notes and an index, and are in the tens of thousands of facts that are in this book. Did we get a few facts wrong, either typographical errors or just an honest mistake? And putting Davis Love's name, or putting Tom Watson's name as the captain of a Ryder Cup team, and instead of, you know, Davis Love the third. Yeah, but the thing that Tiger's side will not do under any circumstances, they would rather shoot the messenger rather than to actually engage in the message of the book. And that's been their modus operandi for years and years and years. And I mean, you guys have covered him. You know what it's like, how difficult it is to get anywhere near him outside of a media center. And we expected it, and we punched back, because this is big boy journalism. I understand clearly understood what the stakes are, as did, but we were going to defend our work right till the hilt. And so that pretty much was the end of it. We have not heard from them since the initial flurry of publicity and everything when the book came out late in March. But you know, we're very proud. The small number of errors, less than, you know, a handful of errors that have all been corrected in subsequent printings. You know, it's sad, because I think, honestly, if Tiger did read this book, he'd find out a lot about himself. He'd find a lot about as to why he is who he is. And
he may be wondering.
I just don't think, given his... I would be if I was him, because I know, having done the reporting about what he went through when he went through the sex addiction treatment, that's all it is. It's basically burrowing backward into the family dynamic, because that's where addiction virtually all the time traces back to, is the family dynamic.
Absolutely.
And so he came out of that Gentle Path program with an understanding of himself that I'm sure he did not have when he went in.
Well, that's the other thing, like Cedric brought up about his father, Earl. Was he trying to emulate him, military, his fascination with Navy SEALs, philandering, controlling? Was he trying to be Earl Woods or just trying to, you know, gain his favor as the chosen one?
I think a lot of it, Kirk, was just what he was taught. And I don't even think the word is taught. I think you have to use words like programmed and manufactured, because in so many ways, we kept thinking about Tiger almost as a computer program because, I mean, you've seen him. He was a machine.
He was perfect. He was a machine.
On the course.
Exactly.
And he was indomitable with his will and his ability to break other people's will and his inability to be thrown off his game by almost anything. And that is taught. That is something that's almost coded by not just Earl, but by his mom, Clotita. She was the one who really was responsible for turning Tiger into the cold-blooded assassin that we saw on the course. And so between, you have Earl on one end and you have Clotita on the other, and Cedric, you mentioned it with, you know, it's in Kirk, in the beginning of this is Eldrick Tiger Woods. Well, the E stands for Earl in Eldrick and the K stands for Clotilda in Eldrick. So literally Tiger was, you know, surrounded by his parents from the time he was born. And, there's a lot of good that came out of that, because I think you don't become the kind of life-altering kind of figure in the world of sports that Tiger did without that kind of grooming. But his interpersonal relationships, his lack of humanity, his sense of entitlement, his deep lack of appreciation for what others did for him, his willingness to amputate people from his life once they had served their purpose, that all traces back to Earl, and in lesser ways Clotita. But by the time you get to Tiger's actions in the middle of the book after he turns pro, but even some of them when he breaks up with his first true love and Dina Gravel, you don't have to look very far to see where that apple fell from the tree.
You know, and I'm that's the part I'm on right now. He's head over heels in love with Dina, and she's invited him over, and her parents like him. And I'm excited. It feels like a soap opera. It doesn't even feel like a real. Doesn't even feel like that he actually lived this stuff. That's how riveting it is. You took the words out of my mouth about Clotita. I didn't know, growing up watching Tiger, I thought that it was all Earl, the military guy with the discipline and all of that. But then I come to a part in the book where they say, well, if you messed with her son, Clotita would kick your ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's a line in the book. I had no idea. I just thought she was this little docile Asian woman that just kept the house.
Yeah, she's the original Tiger mom. I mean, that's what she was. She was the one who told him in the car, you know, don't forget now, this is a game where he's being picked up after school from the time he's 5 years old and driven over to the Navy course in Cypress, California, where he's practicing. Well, Earl's working during that period of time at McDonnell Douglas after he retired from the military. It's Tita who picks him up. It's Tita who drops him off. It's Tita that gets him. It's Tita that drives him to the tournaments. It's Tita that drives him back and forth to practice at Hartwell Golf Course when he begins to get his first teacher at the age of 4 years old. And in the car, in those conversations, she was the one that was implanting in his mind, you know, you step on their throat, you step on their neck, you beat them in a way that they don't forget. Next time you play them, they remember, and they're afraid of you. And that, I mean, it's spooky in a lot of ways, you know.
It is spooky. Because, you know, the rest of the golfing field were fearful. They didn't respect Tiger. They were scared of Tiger. Total intimidation.
Exactly.
We don't see in sports at that level, but, you know, on 18 on Sunday.
We don't see it now. I mean, who on the PGA Tour really scares somebody? I mean, you could say Dustin Johnson when he's in a groove and he's just powering the ball and pounding the ball. But mentally, you're looking for somebody that just goes, I'm going to cut your heart out. I mean, Phil was the only one that I think during that period of time, Kirk, that could give Phil, give Tiger a run for his money in terms of, you know, a set of stones.
Absolutely. And, absolutely. The only one now,
and
Armin.
And I think that's...
Go ahead.
No, no, I'm just saying that. And I look around now and I think of all these guys that say, I can't wait to... you know, compete against Tiger on a Sunday afternoon in a major, and I'm thinking, good luck.
But you know,
be careful what you wish for.
The one guy I would think maybe would be Patrick Reed, because he doesn't mind being the villain. He kind of thrives on that adversarial role.
And he's mean.
He's mean, you know. And, you know, a lot of people...
one guy that would just, you know, give you that look that...
Well, and he wanted to wear red on Sundays.
Yes.
Until Nike said no.
And I think exactly. Until Nike said you got to wear pink.
Yes.
You know, that was nice. But it just to me, you know, trying to understand who this guy we just kept liking him. You know, we liked him to Shakespeare. I was playing golf yesterday with somebody, and we were talking about the book, and they brought up the same kind of names that Jeff and I had kicked around: Mozart, Michael Jackson. These are, you know, once in a century kind of performers that change the way that their game is played, whether it's in music or art or science or whatever it is, and they all come with some traveling luggage. And and I think that from our perspective, which is why the book has really resonated, and not just with golfers and people who love sports, but there's a ton of women that have loved this book because it, and not to say that they don't love golf, but the relationships, and Cedric, you're about ready to get to the Cinderella story is about ready to crack wide open.
I can't wait, man.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker. I'll leave you two for further discussions on another day. But, you know, the way that Tiger breaks up with Dina is, I mean, it is ice cold. And it's the kind of thing you're like, oh, my God. And so this is what, you know, we're going to be looking at.
That's who he is.
And it's the same way with, you know, Joanna Jagoda, who is his next big girlfriend. And Lindsey Vonn, you know, after she fell and fractured her arm after they broke up, you would think at some point in time Tiger would have at least called her to say, you know, how are you doing? Nope, never heard from her. Mark O'Meara, the same way, after the accident in 2009. Charles Barkley hasn't heard from Tiger, hasn't spoken to Tiger, he said, since that accident.
That's amazing.
November of 2009. I mean, you're talking 9 years.
Hey,
and
is there any?
Mark was the same.
They were running buddies too. Me and Chuck and Mike were running buddies. I mean,
oh yeah.
I was going to ask
the Vegas
you.
Vegas side of things here is that you're, Cedric.
Wait.
You're going to. There's a whole chapter for you there in Vegas.
That's my city. Yeah, I was going to ask you. Any mention of Roger Federer, because they had gotten kind of close, and Federer kind of publicly said, no, I'm not hanging with him anymore after all of that went down. Was there any mention of that relationship?
Yeah, there is. Towards the end of the book, it's interesting because they had this kind of running battle going to see who was going to win, you know, the majors, whether Roger was going to break a record or Tiger was going to break, you know, Jack's record for the most majors. And, you know, at one point in time, you would have bet heavily on Tiger. He was just, you know, he won 7 out of 11 majors in a row. I mean, who does that?
Nobody.
Nobody.
7 out of 11.
Yeah.
He made 142 straight cuts. Now when they go 30 cuts in a row, everybody's going, oh, my God, he hasn't missed a cut, you know, in almost a whole season. Well, Tiger went almost 8 years, you know, of playing tournaments without missing a cut. I mean, that when you start to throw some of that stuff around, you're like,
oh yeah,
holy cow. I mean, what were we watching here?
And this was at the height of his infidelity, wasn't it? So it wasn't a distraction.
When you talk about compartmentalizing things, in 2009, right before he's literally, and I think one of the things the book does so well is it depicts Tiger's life coming apart in slow motion because the reporting is so good and we spent so much time, like we interviewed 250 people. So we put together this massive timeline that really dated back to Earl's days in Manhattan, Kansas, growing up, right through literally a month before the book came out. And what it allowed us to do, which I had never done this before for a book, and I found it to be absolutely, I'll never do another book again. I may never do another book again after this one, but but to be able to take really pivotal moments in Tiger's life and very celebrated moments in Tiger's life, whether it's winning the Masters in 97 or winning the U.S. Open in his last major in 08, but then slotting in all these other things that are going on in his life during those particular periods of time, whether it's signing a contract with American Express or having an adulterous relationship with one woman after another. When you put all that together and it turned out to be like a 120-page timeline that Jeff and I finally constructed, you go, oh, no wonder all this, you know, right, was happening, or, you know, or this, that, and the other thing. So in November, let's go back to August of 2009, he loses to Y.E. Yang in the PGA Championship, losing a lead in the final round after leading going into the final round, something that had never happened in Tiger's life before. At the same time, he's seeing Rachel Yucatel and three other women that are still part of his life outside of Elon. But he still wins five tournaments in 2009. So you're thinking, oh my God, how in the world can this guy? But, and you're the columnist, Kirk. I mean, you think in terms of how that acts almost as fuel in a crazy, weird way. It actually was sort of, it was fuel to Tiger's life, that craziness that was going on off the course, in some way fueled his success on the course.
Yeah,
and but then, as often happens, sooner or later he's going to go off the cliff, and he did when he hit the fire hydrant in November of 2009. So you can see the slow motion crash almost spilling out before your eyes before it happens, but at the same time you marvel at the fact that he could accomplish any of that stuff given what was going outside the ropes.
Yeah, there wasn't anything outside of his grasp, literally. And while you would think that infidelity might consume him, it just defined him. And as you said, you know, fueled him. He was on top of the world. He could control all of it, couldn't he?
He did. And it had to be, to a certain degree, absolutely exhausting.
Had to be.
Because, you know, I mean, it's not that his everyday life, pick your touring pro, if J.J. Henry decides he wants to, you know, play in a golf tournament, or even, I mean, anybody in my mind outside maybe the Suns and, you know, two or three other ones, they go on in their own private lives and nobody bothers them. Tiger's days were full.
Yes, and nights.
Sunday to Sunday with obligations, sponsorships, places that he had to be, whether it was a photo shoot or a commercial, on top of trying to, and he practiced like a fiend. So, and if he wasn't practicing, he was working out twice a day.
Yeah.
For 90 minutes at a time. So, to me, he's one of the most interesting people I've ever run across in 40 plus years of some pretty high level journalism. And because his ability to do so many things so well, and we give him all the credit in the world for his, you know, transcendent skills on the golf course. But when you juxtapose that against what's going on off the course, you just you almost have to put the book down sometimes and go, okay, wait a second.
Yeah,
let me just
it's too
make
much.
Sure I've got all this right.
It's too much.
it's too much.
Well, and like you said it earlier, Armin, about he kind of considers people disposable. It's like,
See, that's the part that's the most damning to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some people, I mean, he hasn't, I'm 100 pages in, and Earl hasn't paid for anything.
Right.
Yet.
Yeah.
It's all comped.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all comped.
Well,
and then,
don't hold your breath there,
yeah.
Cedric.
And then,
it's going to be a while before Earl pays for something. And he, that sense of entitlement, coupled with his adulterous ways and you know, his he didn't treat Tyler, you know, terribly well because of, you know, we had people that were inside the house with the that witnessed just this, you know, torrent of verbal abuse that Earl would unleash at times at Tita. So, I mean, imagine that house was 1,474 square feet. Imagine being, you know, there's only three people living in it. There were no siblings, so you have a, you know, an only child and at times a lonely child who was very shy. And he does, in many ways, which is unbelievable, he does what Earl has predicted. He changes the game of golf, and he changes it on a global scale, financially, socially, racially, culturally, all those things. But then you just go, okay, but back to what I said before, but at what cost to Tiger? And I think it was a damning cost in so many ways.
I couldn't agree with you more. And now we're at the time where he's trying to recover from spinal fusion surgery, three back surgeries, and he's finally playing well a little bit. Do you think, one, Armin, he's sincere and genuine about his rehabilitation as a person, or only as a golfer?
That's a good question. I think when I witnessed in January, late January, out at Torrey Pines at the Farmers Insurance Open was a different Tiger. And I had seen him in numerous situations over the previous years that we were working on the book. And, I mean, I saw him walk past kids just, you know, with almost tears in their eyes, just holding out a flagstick or a, you know, a poster for him to sign and walking past them like they weren't even there. And then at Torrey, I saw something different. I saw a more appreciative, a more gracious, a more grateful, a more than Tiger Woods than I'd ever seen. And I think a lot of that stems, guys, from, you know, let's not forget Memorial Day 2017. That weekend, he was found on the side of a road in Florida, didn't know where he was, passed out at the wheel of his car, could have killed himself, certainly could have killed other people, a rock star collection of drugs, both, you know, pain-killing and anxiety-ridding drugs in his system. And you're thinking, wow, this is how it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And then for him to come back with the spinal fusion, the, sort of a miraculous physical recovery, coupled now, I think, Kirk, with a different kind of recovery, an emotional change in Tiger. And I hope it holds, because what we've seen is, you know, people are willing to forgive and forget. This is an America that believes in the story of redemption. And there's no more powerful story, I think, than the rise from the epic fall that Tiger you know, experienced. Because when you go back, and I think one of the great parts of the book is that, you know, the public humiliation that he suffered, that to being in the crosshairs of the tabloid culture, to be on the cover of the New York Post for a record 21 straight days, more days than post 9/11. I mean, it's crazy to think the kind of microscope he was under, National Enquirer following him and stalking him around the country. To be where he is right now, I think, is his, I really do believe it's his greatest triumph. I do. I think it transcends anything that he's achieved inside the ropes. And I just hope that at 42 now, as he, you know, moves into the next phase, or, you know, the second half of his life with his kids relationships that he's able to find some sort of peace. And you see signs of it. Remains to be seen how long it will hold, but it's pretty powerful, you know, right now to see it. And I think it's great for him. We are hoping that there would be an uplifting sort of positive, optimistic ending to the book. And I got to tell you, you know, if you were Jeff and I last Memorial Day thinking about how we were going to end the book, and Kirk, I imagine you've written ends of your columns thousands of times. I wrote the end of this book no less than 4 or 5 different times, the last 500 or 600 words of the book, because it just kept changing. And at certain times, I'd send things to Jeff. He goes, that's just really dark, man. You can't end the book with, you know, going back to Earl's grave. Don't go there. You know, and I'm thinking, okay, well, yeah. That's kind of how I feel at the moment. Right. But okay, we don't have to turn that in yet.
There are a lot of different roads you could have gone down. I mean, it's a fascinating story by one of the most fascinating people in sports ever. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. And you and Jeff have done a terrific job, and we appreciate you stopping by and sharing some of the moments of a fantastic book. And can't thank you enough, Armin.
Well, my pleasure. I'm going to be spending a little time. I'm doing some work with the boys with the Texas crew. So Chip Reeves and Terry Stewart, boys down there. I'm going to doing some work down there. And I was down at South By and had a really nice time. So I've often said that if I wasn't living up here, I'd be living down there. So it'd be nice to come into Austin.
Well, if
thanks, guys.
If
I really appreciate it. Cedric, Kirk, yes. Good talking to you.
If you're ever this way, we'll buy you some barbecue.
I could eat some. That would be good.
Good luck. Thank you, Armin. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Bye-bye.
That will do it for episode 99 of On Second Thought. Got to thank Armin Katayan for coming in and spending some time with us via phone. Next week, the big 100 duck, the big 100.
And they said it wouldn't last.
They said it wouldn't last. We're going to have a best of show. Some
I
of
can't
our
wait.
Best guests. And we're going to have a lot of laughs. So check us out next week on Second Thought.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/backtoschool and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.